They did not capture Karl and Henry Kozlovsky. They're still somewhere in Prague, or probably it was a long time ago they passed away, but they never caught them. Jadwiga Kozlovsky spent her last days in jail. And, of course, Aaron Gins and his wife and his three sons-in-law and their wives were set free. And everybody saw that it was just a lie, a little dumb. And all of this story was written down and sent to the king of that time, and his name was King Rudolf. And Kindelach, in the story that was written down with all the details, that was signed by the chief of police and other officers, the Maharal wrote to the king and asked him, please, permission to be able to speak to the king and ask him something face to face. A few days later, a beautiful wagon from the king's palace with special officers came to the house of the Maharal. And they said that the King Rudolf has sent this wagon to the Maharal. He wishes to see the Maharal. And the Maharal went to the king's palace in the beautiful wagon. Of course, everybody who saw that the king's wagon is in the town and the Maharal is in it came out like a big parade. They saw the Maharal is going to the king with the officers. And the Maharal went himself in front of the King Rudolf as Rudolf was sitting on his beautiful throne in the palace. And as soon as the Maharal got to Rudolf, he began to cry. And he threw himself on the floor. The Maharal fell down on the floor in front of King Rudolf, and he said, please, King, I ask you, please, a favor from the king, that from now on, any story, any kind of accusation that people are making against the Jews, that they take blood and they put it in the matzah, should only be completely thrown out of court before it even comes to the judges. It should not be believed, because so many times these lies have happened and they've made so much trouble for the Jews, and each time everyone sees it's just a false thing, alilas dom. It's a plan, and it's only chas v'shalom, only a troublemaking against us. The Maharal says, I ask the king, please, permission that whenever would come to the judges an evil plan that the Jews are using the blood for the matzah, it should not be believed. It should already be thrown out of court and not be taken seriously. This is what I ask the king. And the Maharal starts to cry because of so many troubles that the Yidden have gone through with these blood libels, alilas dam. Kinalach, King Rudolf himself got off his throne, and with his own hands he picked up the Maharal. He helped him up from the floor. And they brought a special chair, and the Maharal sat down. The king insisted that the Maharal sit down in the chair. And he sent away his officers, and the Maharal and King Rudolf spoke together for over an hour. Nobody knows what was said. But afterwards, the Maharal was sent back home in the beautiful wagon from the king's palace. And again, it was like a parade going through the streets of Prague, this royal wagon with the Maharal in it. And a week later, officers came into Prague and all over the country, and they started blowing the trumpets, and they started announcing and putting up papers all over the place that the king has made a new law that any kind of alilas dam, any kind of chas v'shalom trouble that people are making against the Jews, that they use for the matzah, anything besides flour and water, especially if anybody makes up such a lie, they use blood, will not be believed. It will be known from the beginning that this is an alilas dam, and the judges will never even take it into court. And Kinalach, from that time on, was never, ever again in that country any trouble for the Jews in Alilas Dam. And from then on, of course, and after this Maisa, the Maral became very famous, and his wisdom and his koichos were known all over the country and all over the world. And after that, because the Maral had created the Goylem only to help Jews, especially against Alilas Dam, and this was now finished, he put the Goylem away, and he's still there in the Seamus, in the shul in Prague, upstairs. Okay, for this story we go to a town called Alisk. And everybody's very excited. They're gathered around a big empty field. It's called a lot. It's not where the fields were, it was close to where the buildings were. And over there, the Yidden were waiting, and there came 100 workers with their tools, building tools, and the chief builder, the chief engineer of building, an expert builder, also came over there. And the Yidden are so excited. Today we're starting to build the new shul of Alisk. Oh, we're so excited. We can hardly wait. We're going to start building the new shul today. And they came to watch the workers to build the shul. Now, the Yidden expected to all of a sudden see a building start to be built. In other words, they expected to see the shul start to go up. But they were surprised because the first tools that the builders took out were shovels. And they started to dig a hole. And one of the Yidden said, How come they're digging a hole? We don't want a hole, we want a shul. We're not going to go into a hole to daven, we're going to go into a shul. Well, the Yidden that knew about building, of course, they knew that when you're building a building, you don't start with the building itself. If you put a building on top of the ground, you know what's going to happen? The building could fall down because the dirt on top, on the ground, right on top of the ground, that dirt is soft. And if you're going to build a building on there, it could shift. In other words, the dirt can kind of change from one side to the other, and it's not going to be strong enough to hold up the building, and the building will fall down. And this is what Paroi did to the Yidden in the Mitzrayim, by the way. They had to build buildings on top of ground that was soft, and the buildings fell over, and they made them build the buildings again. How do you get a building to stand strong that it should for sure not fall? This is what you do. You dig a hole way into the ground, very deep. And down there, the ground is very hard. It's very, very hard, and it's not going to change if you build a building over there. Plus, you make what's called a foundation, a yesoid. A yesoid means you put cement or you put rock, and you could put metal also, very strong material to be the bottom of the building. And on top of that foundation, you build the rest of the building. And this is what the workers were doing. They were digging a hole, and that would be the beginning of the shul for the foundation. And the workers were working and working, and the chief engineer of the buildings was watching them and, of course, telling them what to do. Because there's all kinds of different laws, even, and different rules how to build a building to make sure that everything is going to be okay and Chas Shalom will not cave in. The hole should not all of a sudden fall in and the dirt should go back, which would of course be a problem. And they have to know how far to go. All kinds of rules, that's what the building engineers have to know. And Kinilach, they worked and worked until finally the chief engineer announced, "It's time to start the foundation." And the Yidden got excited because the minhig is, and the minhig was, that a tzaddik, or a special person, or a rav, should begin to build the new building. Like we know, by 770, the Rebbe himself took the rock for the beginning of the new building of 770, and that is called the Evan Hapina, or the cornerstone. And of course, we see that cornerstone in the special place by 770. That's the stone that the Rebbe himself picked up and put over there to be the beginning of the new building. Now, in this town of Olisk was a tzaddik. His name was Chanoich Henech of Olisk. And he was a big tzaddik, Chanoich Henech. And he came, and all of them got excited because he is going to now go down into the hole, and he's going to take a stone, and he is going to put it in the corner, and that's going to be the beginning of the foundation. And after that, the workers will take other stones and other cement and all kinds of strong material and build the rest of the foundation. And Kenelach, the 100 workers are waiting, and the chief engineer is waiting, and all the Yidden are standing around and they're waiting, and the tzaddik, Chanoich Henech, comes, and they made a path for him to go down into the hole, and over there was a rock. They prepared a stone, and he was going to take that stone and put it into the corner. And everybody is waiting to watch him to go into the hole in the special place that he prepared that he should climb down. They made like steps over there. And he's not going down. Shh. And everyone's waiting and he's not going down. So the chief engineer thought, maybe I should go myself to invite the rabbi to go down into the hole. And the chief engineer, I don't know if he was a Yid or not, doesn't matter in this story, but he knew what had to be done. He says, Rabbi, it's time to go into the hole and put the stone. And the tzaddik, Chanoich Henech, says, I'm not going into the hole. And the chief engineer says, but everyone is excited that you should begin the foundation. And, of course, that is your custom. That's the minhag. He says, I can't go into the hole. I can't go into the hole because if I would go into the hole, the dirt by the side that's all piled up would cave in. And it's going to be very dangerous for me or anybody to go into that hole. So I cannot go into the hole. Now, the dirt they had dug out of the hole was piled up by the sides, like a big wall. And the engineer says, but Rabbi, we dug the hole according to all the laws of engineering and building, and also the way that the dirt is piled up by the side is very safe, and I assure you that it will not fall in because we've done everything according to all the laws of building, and it's very safe. Nothing will possibly happen if you go into the hole. It's 100% safe. And the tzaddik Chanoich Henech said, I cannot go into the hole. The walls of dirt will cave in into the hole. The Kenelach, the chief engineer, was getting nervous because, first of all, he felt that he had instructed his workers to dig the hole according to all the laws of making a building, and everything was done correctly. Also, all the workers were waiting. They were doing nothing. And they had to get the job done by a certain time because there's other things to do and there's other jobs. And the people that were paying for the workers were also getting nervous because now they're going to have to pay for the workers to stand there and do nothing. It's going to cost them extra money for 100 workers to stand there. And some of the important Yidden from the shul, from the old shul, that they're going to build a new shul, they came to the tzaddik, said, Rebbe, please put the cornerstone for the new shul. He says, okay, first I'm going to the mikveh. Before I put the stone, I'm going to the mikveh. Now, to go to the mikveh would take an extra 15 or 20 minutes, but what could they do? The tzaddik decided he wants to go to the mikveh to make himself halik before he does this special thing. And nobody, of course, could stop him from doing this. He now started to go to the mikveh. As soon as he left for the mikveh, all of a sudden, the walls of dirt started to cave in into the hole. There was no earthquake. It just happened as everybody was standing there watching it. The dirt started caving in into the hole. Had anybody been in the hole, they'd have been chas v'shalom. The worst could have happened. And now everyone was wondering, especially the chief engineer and the workers, how did the tzaddik know that that would happen? Because there was no reason, according to what they did, that that should happen. Because everything was done according to all the rules of building. The safe way, everything was safe, and the walls of dirt were safely put by the side. How did he know that the walls would cave in? Okay, Mirtz Hashem, next week, on Fun Day, or Sunday, whatever you call it, because today we can't have any more story time, and tomorrow there's no lunch time, and Shabbos will be how home, Mirtz Hashem? Hopefully we'll be New Shalayim, but if not, we'll be home. On Sunday, or we call it in my class, Fun Day, because it's so much fun to be in Yeshiva, we're going to continue, Mirtz Hashem, this story. And when he came back from the mikveh, everybody was very interested to hear what in the world did he, if he would tell them, how did he know? It's such a big mess. And this is what the tzaddik said. Now listen very carefully, because this is a very interesting thing. Shh. The tzaddik said, when the hole was dug, and all the dirt was by the side, and everything was ready to put down the cornerstone, so you had prepared a small stone to be used for the beginning of the building. And that was a stone that I was supposed to use for the cornerstone. And as I was looking into the hole, I saw in the dirt, there was another stone. It was mostly covered with dirt, but a little bit of it was showing. And that stone was davening to Hashem. Yes, the stone, even though it was a rock, kinalach, the stone was davening to Hashem, and it was saying to Hashem, Hashem, I'm a very big stone buried in the ground. Nobody has ever seen me because I have been under the ground since the world was created. And I would be such a good stone to be used for the foundation of the shul. But since I'm under the ground, they don't even know about me. And when they build the shul, they won't even use me at all because I'm under the place where the shul will be. So I won't be helping at all to be a part of the shul. I wish I could be a part of the shul. I'm so close by and I'm so big and strong. I would be a perfect stone, even to be used as the cornerstone. But even if not the cornerstone, at least to be used as the foundation. But they'll never find out about me, and I'll just stay down here. And the tzaddik said, as I saw the stone davening, I saw that the stone was davening with all of its koyach, and the malachim were coming down also into the hole, taking the tefillah of the stone to Hashem. And the tzaddik said, I saw that Hashem would accept the davening of the stone. That means the davening would go to Hashem, and Hashem would answer the davening of the stone. And the tzaddik said, how would it be that the stone would be used? I knew that the dirt would have to cave in, and they would have to dig out the hole again. And this time when they dig out the hole, they're not going to dig exactly like before. They're going to dig a little bit different, a little bit deeper, and they're going to find that big stone, and use it. So I knew that I could not go into the hole. And sure enough, Kinalach, they dug out the hole, they found a big stone, and they used it for the foundation, for the beginning of the shul. Now, this is a wondrous story, but I want to tell you a very interesting thing from this story. Even a stone, Kinalach, has a spark of halakhite. It's not exactly like our neshama, but it's a halakhite from Hashem, and it could even daven to Hashem, even though it's just a stone. Now, the Arizal, the halakhet tzaddik, the Makubal, the Arizal, said that everything in the world, even a stone, has a halakhite and something like a neshama. And there are other stories also that we know that everything in the world has a halakhite and a spark of halakhite for Hashem. Now, I want to tell you another interesting thing about a flower. It's not a stone, but it's a flower. How many boys think that a flower also has a little neshama inside of the flower? Okay, listen to this very carefully, because it's a wondrous thing. Listen to this very carefully. The scientists were studying different things, and they heard that it says in the Torah that a flower also has a life and a feeling and a little neshama. And they said, let's find out if it's really true. Let's find out if we could discover anything about a little neshama inside of a flower. What could we do? Well, one of the smart scientists said, I have a way of putting wires and computer stuff and different electronic things, and I could pick up different signs of life through the computer from the flower. Now, this is a thing that really happened. So he took a computer and he took different wires and different electronic things and different scientific stuff, and they attached it to a flower until it looked like an electric flower, but it was a real live flower in a flower pot, but it had all kinds of wires and stuff on it, and the screen started to make beeps, different beeps, and they said, this beep is coming from the flower. And people came by to look at the flower. It was a beautiful flower. A person came by, all of a sudden the beep went way up. Instead of being a beep just going straight, the beep went straight up like a light thing on the computer. Another person went by, and again, as soon as the person got close to the flower, the beep went way up. They started to say, I wonder why the beep is going up. So the scientist asked the first person, what did you think about when you saw the flower? And the person said, I thought about how beautiful the flower is. And he said to the second person, what did you think about when you saw that flower? He says, I also thought, how beautiful is that flower? And they started to see, whenever a person would come close to the flower, and they would think about how beautiful the flower was, the beep on the screen went way up. All of a sudden, somebody went by the flower, and the beep went down. Now, that was the first time they saw the beep go way down. And they wondered, how come all of a sudden the beep went down instead of up? And they asked the person, What happened when you went by the flower? Because when you went by, the beep went down. The person said, oh, I was thinking like this, that in my house, I also have a flower like that. But in my house, the flower is nicer. In my house, I have a nicer flower than this flower. This flower is not as nice as my flower. What happened to the beep? Did it go up? No. Where did it go? Down. In other words, the flower could feel what the person was thinking. If the person thought a nice thought about the flower got excited. If the person thought not such a nice thought, the flower felt it and the beep went down. Mekinalach, if this is true with a flower and the life of a flower, what about a person? Who's got more of a special neshama? A flower neshama or a person neshama? A person neshama. Now, what if you think a nice thought about your friend, how nice he is? Your friend is going to feel it, and his heart is going to feel good. What if you're going to think, chas v'shalem, not a nice thing about your friend? You know what happens in your friend? His feelings go a little bit down. That's only thinking. And if you speak nice to a person, it especially makes them feel good. And a chas v'shalem, you don't speak nice to a person, it goes down. Now, this is an amazing thing, how every life, everything has a life, and it feels a different life. And we have a big koyach, either to help those little neshamas feel better, or the opposite. So let's, of course, do whatever we can to make them feel better. Talk nice and think nice about people, and it's only good, and it's only good.